SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to. From the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yama, and welcome to NITV Radio. Bertrand Tungandami ngaya. I'm Bertrand Tungandami. Coming up in your program this Monday, the 26th of August, well, like every Monday afternoon, we bring you some current affairs stories shared with us by NITV's NOLA program. Also on NITV Radio today, we have a conversation with Bachelor Institute's Professor Catherine Gibley and Marie Elena Hellis, talking about the just wrapped up Spirit Global Gathering, an event that brought together First Nations experts from around the world exploring ways to improve child development and well-being in First Nations communities. We also look back at a celebration of culture and science at the Red Fern Community Centre in the context of National Science Week 2024. But first, the latest news on NITV Radio.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, Torres Strait Islander leaders demand independent inquiry following alarming findings on preventable deaths in remote hospitals. Parramatta gets a brand new state-of-the-art police station. And the number of Palestinians killed since the 7th of October rises to over 40,000. Queensland government investigation into chronic disease and deaths in remote hospitals in the far north has identified major gaps in primary health care. The 12-month investigation examined primary health care services across 34 hospitals and clinics in Cape York and the Torres Strait, finding the data and information used to assess First Nations health is often inaccurate and unreliable. Mayor of the Torres Strait Island Regional Council, Philemon Mosby, says the investigation came after First Nations leaders demanded action over high rates of preventable deaths and chronic disease.
For a population of 15,000, having 3 to 4 deaths per week, having to attend numerous sorry business, both inside local community and across the region, was very alarming but traumatizing.
But a coalition of local government leaders in the Torres Strait have condemned the report as an internal review that lacks independence, and they're calling for a coronial investigation.
Our people must be given the power to control and manage the change that will affect and deliver the outcomes that we want now and for the future.
Workers who receive calls or emails from their boss during annual leave late at night or while cooking dinner for their family will have the right to ignore them until they begin their shift. The new laws on the right to disconnect have now come into effect. The legislation is meant to ensure employees are paid for every hour they work instead of the average 5.4 hours a week they currently perform without pay, according to the Australia Institute. Australians can refuse to monitor, read or respond to work communication outside of paid hours unless doing so is unreasonable. Andrew McKellar is the CEO of the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. He says there's still a great deal of uncertainty on how the law will operate and what it means for business owners.
Does it mean that they have the right not to respond? No, it's not a blanket right. Of course, it has to be reasonable. It has to be on reasonable grounds. And I think at the moment there's a real lack of certainty about what determines whether that action is reasonable or unreasonable. And I think that's something that we really won't know how that is going to be interpreted until we start to see some test cases coming forward.
The Business Council of Australia says the changes to the industrial relations laws that come into effect today will crush productivity. Labour's Closing Loopholes IR legislation comes into effect today, enshrining a right to disconnect into law and changing the definition of a casual worker. The Productivity Commission found labour productivity fell by 3.7% in 2023-2024, well below the long-term average growth rate of 1.3% per annum. In a statement, Business Council Chief Executive Brand Black said the changes add more cost and complexity to doing business, which could turn potential investors away from the country. Tasmania's Premier vows to make governing work no matter how hard it gets, despite a major fracture in the balance of power that keeps the Liberals in charge. This comes as two MPs from the Jackie Lambie network parted ways with the party to serve as independents in Tasmania's lower house. Miriam Beswick and Rebecca Pentland are looking to sign a new agreement in the coming days with Jeremy Rockliffe's minority Liberal government. Mr. Rockliffe has promised to continue so as to avoid another election and maintain business confidence. Gaza health authorities say the death toll from 10 months of fighting has reached 40,405, with 93,468 injured. In the last 24 hours alone, 71 people were killed and 112 injured in ongoing Israeli bombings. The United Nations says successive Israeli evacuation orders in Gaza have displaced 90% of its 2.1 million residents since October 7 Hamas attack. Fears over further escalation in the last 24 hours have been triggered after Israel launched what it called self-defense strikes on targets in Lebanon as Hezbollah fired hundreds of rockets and drones over the border. Meanwhile, Hamas official Osama Hamdan has accused Israel of stalling talks on a deal for a ceasefire. Negotiations have resumed in Cairo. Meanwhile, White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says further escalation must be avoided.
We have been concerned about the conflict escalating into an all-out regional war since October 7th, and we have worked round the clock with partners and allies, moving military assets, engaging in intensive diplomacy, both publicly and privately behind the scenes, to avert that outcome. We continue to work to avert that outcome. And our hope is that the events of last night do not spill out into an escalation that leads to regional war.
Reuters says its safety advisor in Ukraine, Ryan Evans, has been killed and two of its journalists injured in a missile strike on a hotel in Kramatorsk, eastern Ukraine, on Saturday, August 24. Mr. Evans, a former British soldier, had been advising Reuters journalists on safety since 2022, including in Ukraine, Israel, and at the Paris Olympics. He was only 38. Two journalists are currently in hospital, with one seriously injured. Reuters has not confirmed whether the missile was fired by Russia or if the hotel was deliberately targeted. Russia's defense ministry did not comment. And back home, Australian travellers could soon benefit from improved refund policies and better customer service for flight delays and cancellations. The government is set to announce today measures aimed at enhancing the aviation industry's sustainability, competitiveness, efficiency and safety with the expected release of the Aviation White Paper. Transport Minister Catherine King tells Seven Sunrise that among the measures is the appointment of an aviation industry ombudsperson.
We know that leading into COVID, during COVID and post-COVID, you know, airlines and airports obviously have struggled, but what we've seen particularly is a really poor experience from the part of passengers. Delays, lost baggage, people not able to get refunds, not understanding the contracts often that they've entered into when they're purchasing a ticket, and they're not able to actually be able to use that ticket going forward. So the ombudsperson will really be able to receive complaints, and it's also really about getting that long-term improvement.
Western Sydney's law enforcement capabilities have been enhanced with the opening of the new $46.6 million Parramatta Police Station. The state-of-the-art facility will house around 180 officers across various units, including general duties, criminal intelligence, domestic violence, bicycle patrols, prosecutors and traffic command. Police and Anti-Terrorism Minister Yasmin Ketley says the station provides essential resources and facilities to effectively combat crime and serve the expanding community.
This facility, which is purpose-built, accommodates the police in ways that they have never been accommodated before. It has technology like we have not seen. It is second to none. We have facilities here, we have extra custodial facilities here, we have DV and sexual assault specialist rooms, which are really important. And I was just speaking to some of those officers who are working in the DV team, and they now have a special purpose-built DV team area located in this building. They were saying how much better it is than when they were working in Wetherill Park, for instance.
In Victoria, several severe thunderstorms have unleashed havoc with substantial hail and powerful winds causing significant disruption. The state emergency service has been inundated with 477 calls for help handling issues from fallen trees to structural damage. The storms were particularly severe in Emerald and Bendigo, where golf ball-sized hailstorms were reported. Wind gusts reached up to 150 kilometres an hour in the Alpine regions, affecting flights in and out of Melbourne. Power outages also occurred across the state. While conditions in Melbourne have improved with a cooler forecast and potential showers, the weather is expected to warm up again by Tuesday, likely reaching around 20 degrees Celsius. Miriam Bradbury from the Bureau of Meteorology says high winds will be a concern across parts of Australia over the next few days.
A dry, mostly sunny start to the week, with temperatures starting to peak through southeast and central Queensland. On Tuesday, much of southern Australia will see winds increasing once again. Damaging gusts will become a risk across southern parts of Western Australia and a widespread hazard throughout the southeast states.
And to sport, for the second year in a row, Fremantle has been eliminated from the final race, this time due to a 20-point defeat at the hands of Port Adelaide, a result that consequently secured Carlton's position in eighth place. The Dockers went into Sunday's game with the knowledge that a victory would guarantee them a spot in the finals, especially after St Kilda narrowly edged out the Blues by 2 points. The atmosphere at Optus Stadium was electric when Jack Higgins of St Kilda netted a goal just 12 seconds before the end, clinching a win against Carlton. However, Fremantle failed to capitalise on this, falling short in their own match. Willie Rioli was instrumental in Port Adelaide's win, scoring 2 goals in the last quarter to help his team's triumph. And now having a look at the weather on the country, Broome, sunny, 34, Perth, possible shower, 22, Adelaide, a shower or 2, 18, Melbourne, possible shower, 18, Hobart, similar conditions and 16 degrees, Albury-Wodonga, cloudy and 15, Canberra, possible shower, 17 degrees, Wollongong, wind easing and a sunny day, 22 degrees, Sydney, sunny as well, 24 degrees, Newcastle, wind easing and sunny, 26, Brisbane, partly cloudy, 31, Townsville, mostly sunny, 27, Cairns, much the same, 28, Alice Springs, sunny, 27, Darwin, also sunny, 34, and the Torres Strait Islands, a mostly sunny day ahead and a top of 29 degrees. And that is NITV Radio News.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
And that was Stay, a song by Australian rapper and singer The Kid Laroi and Canadian singer Justin Bieber. It has to be said, this song was released back in 2021 as the lead single from Laroi's Reloaded mixtape. I'm Bertrand Tungandame, and you're listening to an ITV Radio coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Monday afternoon. And still to come in your program, we have a conversation with Bachelor Institute Professor Catherine Gibley and Marie-Elena Ellis talking about the just-wrapped-up Spirit Global Gathering, an event that brought together First Nations experts from around the world exploring ways to improve child development and well-being in First Nations communities. The program will also look back at a celebration of culture and science at the Red Fund Community Centre in the context of National Science Week. But first, the first woman to serve as Minister for Indigenous Australians delivered her final speech in federal parliament. The first Indigenous woman to be elected to the House of Representatives announced her retirement last month, stepping away from her role as Minister for Indigenous Australians. The Wiradjuri politician says she believes there will be positive outcomes from the failed voice referendum and says Australians need to find unity and a common narrative.
Friends, progress doesn't always move in a straight line. The road is rocky. There are obstacles in the path. We have our stumbles and our setbacks. But our overall direction is towards progress. And with each passing generation, we bend the moral arc of the universe closer to justice. I think Australia sometimes struggles with our identity because we never came to terms with our own story. Never embraced the breadth and depth of it, certainly not its truth. The generosity we pride ourselves on is rarely extended to the people in this nation who have occupied these lands for countless generations. Why? Part of the answer is that we don't have a shared narrative. If you consider our nation's story like the strata of a rock, there is an extraordinary foundation of First Nations people, the layer of European settlers, and of course many convicts amongst those numbers. Then there's a layer upon layer of people who settled in Australia because of conflict and the search for a better life. Many of you are children of those people.
Linda Barney's speech was brought to us by NITV's NOLA program, a program that specialises in current affairs from a First Nations perspective.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Now, Aboriginal tenants in Western Australia have launched a class action against state housing authorities alleging severe neglect of their homes. It comes amid a housing crisis nationwide. The tenants are seeking justice for years of substandard living conditions, highlighting a need for accountability and urgent reforms, as Omo Bello reports.
Living in a house that could crumble around you, where every storm is a potential disaster, and the place you call home becomes the greatest threat to your health and safety. That is the reality of many Aboriginal families in remote parts of Western Australia. Many Aboriginal families in public housing are battling living conditions that many may find unimaginable. A class action has been filed against the Housing Authority and the State of Western Australia, accusing them of taking advantage of Indigenous renters by charging them high rents for poor quality properties. The suit filed by law firm Slater & Gordon claims the State and Housing Authority has failed to maintain, repair and improve their properties or provide housing that is secure, comfortable and safe. The class action's primary lawyer, Gemma Lee Dodds, claims the houses are in unlivable conditions.
Holes in roofs, like I'm talking a hole through to the sky above. I'm talking about significant leaks, pervasive mould, pest infestations. These are the kinds of things that tenants in remote communities are putting up with. And not only are they putting up with it, they're paying rent for the privilege. And that's what the case is about. When you pay rent as a tenant, you're not just loaning a roof over your head. You are investing in the ability to live in a secure and safe home.
Almost 200 housing properties in several remote communities across the state were surveyed earlier this year as part of the law firm's investigation into the case. Vivian Gordon, a resident and leader of one of the affected communities, Bayulu, says the situation requires urgent action.
We're not being treated fairly. We have a right on communities to make sure that housing is done correct way. We work in well with our mob here to make sure that the tenants are doing the right things as tenants in our community. So we want to make sure that housing does the right thing by us through their process and procedures. So it gets quite frustrating when you're dealing, especially with our elderly tenants, where the wait time's a bit longer to get things fixed in their houses.
Jujunwa father, Eric Bedford, says Aboriginal people deserve better.
I'll say to the government is, it's not how you start the race, it's how you finish. If you can start and look after us, then maybe Aboriginal people will change their views on the way they view the government. So that's what I'd say. You know, stop putting us last in line. Maybe give us a fair crack at our own.
The class action filed in the federal court accuses the Housing Authority and the state of Western Australia as landlords of public housing in remote Aboriginal communities of violating several residential tenancies, contract and consumer protection laws between July 1, 2010 and August 19, 2024. Tenants are asking through the class action for urgent repairs on neglected homes, financial compensation for overpaid rent, out-of-pocket expenses, and the distress caused by living in substandard conditions. Ms. Lee Dodds says the outcome of this legal battle could change the lives of thousands across the state.
Properties have been rented without basic amenities. I'm talking the ability to go and fill up a glass of water from a tap. Many tenants don't have safe drinking water that is being supplied to their houses, as well as lacking any appropriate sewage, lacking reliable electricity. In addition, many houses have significant repair issues that can't be put down to tenant liability problems. These are clearly landlord responsibilities.
Ms. Gordon says the government must step up.
We really need the help from the government to set up a good system in place, whether it's reporting maintenance and other issues with housing. I think that's the best way to go, is going through with this class action and hopefully seeing better results at the end of the day.
Mr. Bedford says Aboriginal people deserve better.
I reckon just get up here and start doing stuff. Don't just leave us remote and think we're going to stay remote, because, and as Aboriginal people, I think we all see that we're starting to be educated and hold the government accountable. The government haven't even come here yet. I never seen one minister or anything yet. In the whole time, I'm born and raised here, you know? But yet, they never seen petrol. But they can make court changes or whatever they want to do down there. I believe, how can you make change when you never even been there?
Omar Bello, SBS News.
We must now step aside for a break, but stay with us, because when we come back, we'll look at the Global Gathering, an event that just brought together around the weekend, actually right across last week, but closed its proceedings over the weekend, and it brought together 100 First Nations people from New Zealand, Canada, the United States, and from around Australia to share the successes and challenges of the International Spirit Project. Stay tuned.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
Make sure you get the full picture, not just what the social media feed gives you. Find all our news and stories at SBS Language website. Bookmark sbs.com.au/language in your web browser today. And that was Warrior Up by Mitch Tambo. Coming up next, well, last week, the Bachelor Institute brought together at its Bantwe campus in Alice Springs 100 First Nations, actually more than 100 First Nations people from New Zealand, Canada, the United States, and from around Australia to share the successes and challenges of the International Spirit Project. A project that explores ways to improve child development and well-being in First Nations communities. I caught up with some of the key players in the event to learn more.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
The Bachelor Institute is hosting the second edition of SPIRIT. SPIRIT stands for Supporting Play and Intergenerational Relationships with the Indigenous Tradition. Funded by Toymeka Lego and led by key academic institutions from the United States, Canada and New Zealand, including the Bachelor Institute in Australia, the global gathering is bringing together 100 First Nations people from partner organizations in the said countries to share the successes and challenges of the International Spirit Project as it enters year two. And I'm glad to say we're joined on NITV Radio by two key players in the Spirit Project event taking place at Bachelor Institute. Before we delve into our conversation, I'll let our guests introduce themselves to our listeners.
My name's Catherine Gilby. I work at Bachelor Institute. I head up the Higher Education and Research Division at Bachelor. And I'll just quickly hand over to Marie, who can introduce herself.
Hello, my name's Marie Elena Ellis.
And Marie's a project worker on the Global Partner Gathering. I'm an Aoyawada woman from Sandover Way, northeast of Alice Springs. Marie's Aranda and Walfrey. We're really pleased, so happy to be part of this project, this global project. So we're partnering with John Hopkins University, the Centre for Indigenous Health, the University of Otago in New Zealand, and the First Nations Health Authority in British Columbia in Canada. And Bachelor Institute is the Australian representative on this global partner initiative.
Yeah, it's a global initiative that supports play and intergenerational relationships with Indigenous tradition. Really, really a powerful theme and topic to be working on. Tell us more about it and how it all came about. How did it all start?
So it's a global Indigenous-led initiative. When Lego the Toy turned 90 about 2 years ago, the Lego Foundation partnered with the Lever for Change Foundation and they sent out a global call across the world. Send us your projects that wouldn't otherwise be funded. Send us your projects that, you know, can create a world of play for children that can affect real change in the world. John Hopkins has a program that's called Family Spirit that began in the Navajo Nation and is rolled out across the US now in 20 different sites. Our application at its core was to roll out Family Spirit program across the world, so in Canada, New Zealand and Australia. So it's a 0-6 child and maternal health program that is Indigenous run, led, all of the knowledges that form this curriculum have come from community. It's a home visiting based program.
Yeah.
We're in the process of adapting it to our culture, our underculture. Marie is the adaptations person. But also there's a second part of this project, which is to create play spaces that support intergenerational knowledge sharing. So we're literally going to build playgrounds that are deeply informed from the local culture, but they're nature-based play spaces that will encourage grandmothers to come and cook while their children play, while the young people
can play chess well. So, you know, we're going to create play spaces that don't exist otherwise without this project. It's just joyous. Can I also say one thing? I'll say one thing from the outset.
Yeah.
I am a completely satisfied person at this minute. We're halfway through this week. This is the second global partner gathering. The first one was in New Mexico.
Yeah.
We started in Albuquerque and we traveled down to the Santa Ana Pueblo and then we went up to the Navajo Nation. I knew then, I said, Australia will be second. And now we've got 70 people from First Nations people from across the globe here in Mbantua, in Alice Springs. I couldn't be prouder of my community. I couldn't be prouder of my community of practice in terms of this partnership that we have. We work so well together, and Alice Springs has just showed up to welcome these people in, you know, the most beautiful of ways. So we had an excursion yesterday where we went out to Ormiston Gorge, which is just stunning country. And then we went on to the traditional owners block next door, and everyone got some clapsticks or a kudra. And so then we had this moment as we were eating dinner out in the bush of the Canadians singing one of their songs with the Australian clapsticks, of the Maori young fellas doing a dance with the Australian kudra. This is some of the strengths that come out of this project. And it's not government money, which means that we can actually affect real change in our communities in ways that none of us can even see. The thing about Lego as a toy is those blocks, 9 of them in your hand, there are infinite possibilities that can be created from that. And this project is very much like the toy itself. There are infinite possibilities that can be created when First Nations people are like leading the, you know, we're driving the vehicle.
Yeah. The project allows to work with elders, as you mentioned. It focuses on the from 0 to 6 years, which are the most important years in the formative period mm-hmm. of the young children. And it also involves the elders, the knowledge keepers, and they're transmitting it to the young kids at a very young age. Bachelor is specialized in both ways learning. Tell us a bit more how this was developed and how it's taking, is shaping up.
There's nothing new in knowledge transmission from across generations in Aboriginal society. But there's been a massive disruption to that called colonialism. So we have the oldest education system in the world and the most effective system in the world because it's the oldest. What we're doing is going back to the old ways, getting, in fact, as part of the adaptation process, Marie's developed this, it's called grandmother's law. So, well, you know, John Hopkins is calling like the Child and Maternal Health Family Spirit Program. Will be adapted to be, okay, so this is how grandmothers have always taught their daughters and their granddaughters and their great-granddaughters. But we're just providing a vehicle for that to happen again properly, like in the old ways. And we're providing spaces for that to happen properly,
yeah.
like in the old ways. And so what this project means is that there's been so much investment in language loss, in language being removed and people being removed from country. This is an opportunity to go back and say, okay, now we can resource a process that is about grandmothers sitting down with their grandchildren, going hunting, you know, sitting down cooking. We want to yeah. create a family space. We want to create a centre. In Alice Springs, that will be a family drop-in centre where the program will be run, but it will be a really family-based space so that it's not clinical. Part of the problem is, you know, these health programs, when they run out of clinic, is that they are clinical models. This is an old ways model.
Marie, you also play a key role in this spirit program as a project coordinator. Tell us about your work in the project. Starting from how you got involved in the program.
I was one of the person that was picked to go to our first trip
to from Sydney to America to for the Lego Foundation Family Spirit Program gathering. For me, it was really interesting because the Maternal Health and Child Family Spirit Program was the package that I saw that they use was similar to the one that I used to work with Conquerors, Central Australian. Anyway, I was so familiar with the Maternal Health and Child Program that I put my hand up. I started working on it. So I volunteered, and yeah, I am in the process of working on the adaptation to put in a lot of the Aranda pedagogy into each and every program that's going to be in it for play.
It is said that the program was launched in response to a global early childhood emergency exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic, because we know during the pandemic when people were in lockdown and everything was at standstill, the impact of the response to the pandemic was really devastating for children, couldn't interact with their communities properly. Tell us how this has really helped the children overcome, those who've come through this program, how it helps them overcome the effects of the lockdowns and catch up with the rest of the communities and other children.
These kinds of projects are years in the making.
Yeah.
So we'd sort of started it before the pandemic, and as the pandemic was kind of hitting, it, you know, it rolled out across the world and everything changed just a little bit. But the crisis in our communities, in terms of child removal, the crisis in our communities, in terms of our interaction with systems that don't necessarily like us very much, that existed before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And this project really is aimed at providing just an opportunity to sit outside of the real Western mainstream for a second and go back to the old, like I was saying. So the pandemic changed everything in the whole world. We all saw that in real time with our own eyes.
You know, it's just a devastating effect.
Oh, yeah. And it hit Indigenous communities in the US really hard. Less so here. We're in the Northern Territory. We shut down early and then we opened early, and a lot of our communities just didn't even let people come in. There were, you know,
they were
so
completely
the impact
isolated.
In the Northern Territory wasn't as great as it has been in other places.
Yeah. The project has started in Pantui and Aranta area country. Is it going to be rolled out in other parts of Australia? Because it sounds like a very, very promising project and acclaimed worldwide. Is it going to be rolled out in other parts of Australia, and how is it going
it
to
sure
be
It sure is.
Out?
Yeah. So the global rollout this is a 5-year implementation plan that we're funded for.
Yeah.
So the global rollout is kind of happening now. So it will also, we'll have some play spaces in the top end of the Northern Territory. And we're also working a partner relationship with Northern New South Wales. Now, New South Wales has such a high rate of Aboriginal child removal that we consider it to be a crisis situation.
Some even call it a second wave of stolen generation.
Absolutely, it is a second wave of stolen generation. It's kidnapping. In any other society or culture, it's called kidnapping. The rate at which children are being put in out of home care. So certainly we're looking to work with. I can't really announce it yet, but work with, you know, probably the leading institution who's in this space in Sydney, and work on real policy change out of this project so that we can, if nothing else, just affect national and state and territory-based policy
Also, we're going to fund a program called the First, not fund, but support a program called the First 2000 Days, because we all know that the first 2000 days are the most important in early childhood development.
And that was part of my conversation with Bachelor Institute's Professor Catherine Gibley, Australian lead researcher for the Spirit Project. And there was also in the conversation Maria Elena Ellis, who is project coordinator of the Spirit Project. This Spirit Project Global Gathering just wrapped up over the weekend. It was held at Bachelor Institute's Mbantwe campus in Alice Springs. As a reminder, the event brought together around 100 First Nations people from New Zealand, Canada, the United States, and from around Australia to share the successes and challenges of the International Spirit Project. It's a five-year project supporting play and intergenerational relationships with Indigenous tradition. The full conversation with Catherine Gibley and Marie Elena Ellis will be published on our website. We must now step aside, but stay tuned, because when we come back, we'll be looking back at a science experience event held at the Red Fern Community Centre last week in the context of Science Week 2024.
Join the conversation on radio, online, and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
You couldn't miss the Indigenous Science Experience Day at Redfern Community Centre. There were sounds, smells, even a taste. At the entrance, I'm met by students from Wagga Wagga, Annika and Ella, who are helping at the event.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Annika Aiden, and I'm from Coringle High School in Wagga Wagga.
I'm Wiradjuri. I'm Ella Maloney, and I'm from Mount Austin High School in Wagga Wagga.
I'm also Wiradjuri.
What is happening here?
So today we have kind of a representation of NISEP. So it's the National Indigenous Science Education Program. We have heaps of representatives and help from Macquarie University, and we're showing and sharing our culture today. It has been really great, like the learning, the fun, like the community, it's like the best, it's great.
And what was the thing that caught most interest of the people here?
I'm going to have to say the sound, which is what I was on before, the sound bowls, because it's obviously a very loud, you can hear it all the way across the park. Yeah, I feel like that's one of the main attractions out here today.
Right next to the sound station is a boomerang man, Jake. Jake comes from a long line of boomerang makers. He's explaining the tools he has on display to a young family. All the kids are looking with curiosity.
My name's Jake. My people come from all over New South Wales. So my father's father's from the Bundjalung and Biripi people of Far North Coast. My father's mother's from the Wawan people of Warren, central western New South Wales. And my mother's father's from the Bidjigal and Darawal people, which is a tribe south of this area and then all the way down the south coast. My background's in archaeology. So I work as an archaeologist, but with my education business, I focus on sort of the science and history of my people and different artifacts, tools and weapons. Yep.
That's what you have here today. So what can we see?
So I have our two different forms of boomerang. So we have our returning boomerang, which is a strong part of my family. My Timbri family have thrown boomerangs for, you know, the Queen, Abba, Uncle Joe threw one around the Eiffel Tower. So, yeah, I come from a long line of boomerang artifact creators. So, yeah, we've got our returning boomerangs and then our killer boomerangs, which are the larger, more dangerous ones, which we use to hunt land animals, emus, kangaroos, stuff like that. And then we also have, you know, various artifacts. So everything we've got from my people is just the way in which we utilize and manage the environment. Everything is from the environment. We didn't need anything else. We lived in harmony, sustainability. There was lots of kangaroos, there was lots of emus, there was lots of plants and foods and stuff which never went extinct. A lot of people have an idea that Indigenous people were struggling to survive, which is very much not the case. My people had plentiful food. We had lots of seafood, coastal food, everything. Yeah, the misconception that we were struggling is a very big one.
At the Indigenous Science Experience Day in Redfern, we also had a chance to learn about traditional dyes.
I'm Tani.
I'm a proud Gomeroi woman. I work at Macquarie University as a research assistant, helping to work with native plant dyes. So I'm working with Stephanie Beaupark, who works at Wollongong University, but we're looking specifically here at a eucalyptus tree and an indigo tree, and we're looking at the different, I guess, the presence of the dye depending on the season that the plant is being used. So we have some balls of wool here that are very, like, deep sunburnt orange sort of colour, and then we have some indigo as well here that we've dyed, and it's a very pale, almost sky blue. So we just wanted to have this little session here to talk with people about the dyes that are available in Australia that you might not hear a lot about, and that these things are just growing in your backyard, and this knowledge has been passed down for thousands of years and protected by a variety of Aboriginal communities, and we just wanted to showcase a little example.
Let's now go inside into a big room to participate in a dance workshop. It is led by a legendary dancer, Wiradjuri woman Rayma Johnson. She has danced with Bankara, she's travelled the world, dancing and teaching. Everyone is sitting in a circle whilst Rayma is sharing her story and how it all began. She talks about how it was for her growing up as an Indigenous kid, who really wanted to dance.
Aboriginal people, children, were not invited into dance spaces, mainstream. I couldn't go and do ballet, I couldn't do a contemporary.
But Rayma found a way, and her friend invited her to her ballet class.
So, I went along, but I didn't just go. I brought my sister, my cousin. I'm like, yeah, come on, we're all going to go dancing, you know, because we wanted to dance. In our community, in most communities around New South Wales, because there was a law that Aboriginal elders, our elders, could not teach the children a language, song, dance, stories, culture, nothing. My great-grandfather, my mother's mother's father, he was a senior lawman. He was actually jailed for sharing language and song with his people.
Today, it is different. People can share their culture, and many are willing to learn. Rayma says the children that she teaches in her incursion programs at schools are curious.
A lot of kids are, you know, finding out about their heritage. You know, they want to know. Maybe grandparents or other family members kept it. But you get these young ones, especially in the high schools, they've got that passion. They want to know about their people. Where am I from?
And today, at the Redfern Community Centre, everyone is invited to dance.
Here we go, Brittany. Yes! Oh my God, you learn so quick, yes?
And this story was produced by NITV Radio's Sharga Pekova. Now, if you missed the beginning of this story or you want to listen to it again, well, it's already published on our website, sbs.com.au/NITV Radio. And that's all from us on NITV Radio this Monday afternoon. Your program will be back on Wednesday with more stories from right across the country. I'm Bertrand Tungandame, thanking you for your company this Monday afternoon, leaving you with a Shed Away by Electric Fields.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.